Ready. Oh. Anytime.
Hi, everyone. I'm Emily.
And I'm Vince.
And this is the Lighthouse Lowdown.
Sounded like me.
I tried to copy the way you said it before
the
we started.
The Lighthouse Lowdown. Oh, before.
Yeah, you say it like a wrestling announcer.
Just seems right.
Whatever those are called. All right. It's going to be a shorter episode today.
Okay. Just short episode.
A little one. I liked the name of the lighthouse, so that's why I selected it. But it didn't have like a whole lot of history around it. So that's what happened.
Nice.
I do have a history buoy. And I should have looked at the patent for this one, because I'm sure it would have had a better explanation for how this works. But we are covering the sun valve for our history buoy.
Oh, I thought that was the lighthouse. The sun valve lighthouse.
That would be so cool. But no. I looked up, I wanted the history buoy to be, what do you do to a lighthouse in order to automate it? And so it's actually not that easy to find like just an article or something written about that. So I had to just look at what people invented that started automating lighthouses.
Well, so, like, what do you mean? Because I would argue that there's been various levels of automation.
Exactly. Well, that's what I mean, is that I'm looking at now the beginning of automation. There was they did stuff before this, but like the real start of having automated lights is from this invention called the sun valve.
Okay.
By Gustav Dahlin. I'm just going to try to pronounce his name there. So it is a large black metal rod surrounded by three polished metal rods, and those are all enclosed in a glass tube. And so the concept is that the black rod in the center would absorb more heat than the others when the sun would rise.
Oh.
And would therefore expand in the sunlight. And then this expansion would cut off the gas supply in the valve during the day, which in turn would switch the lighthouse off.
That's awesome.
I know. Like, cut off the gas flow, light turns off.
That's incredible.
And then after the sun would set, the black rod would cool down again and open the gas and thus turning the light on. So the gas, when it's available, is lit by a pilot light that's always burning. So okay. I think that was one of the things that was a struggle, is that if the little flame went out, then there's no light. But it was pretty reliable. They used it for a lot of buoys and for some lighthouses.
That's incredible. For those of you who are just listening, we're looking at an image that looks like a Martha Stewart pepper cracker. Something like super high tech. Was it pepper cracker?
To me, this looks like a component that someone would steal in a future movie, like a futuristic movie that's like, you know, imperative for some big...
Yeah, this is the combobulator. You see, the combobulator's broken.
What is that from?
There's a series of guys on TikTok that go and lowball people for cars.
Oh, no.
It's kind of tragic. I think one of them got arrested lately for something. What? I'm not sure. But one of the things they'd introduce themselves as this guy's Tommy Tough Knuckles, this guy, you know, that's like how he'd introduce himself. And they get under the car and they're looking at, you know, various vehicles, and he'd say, "Oh, the combobulator's busted." The owner's always kind of like, "Well, okay, whatever." Like, and then because they're saying a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, this looks like a combobulator.
I think I don't like people being punked like that.
No, you shouldn't use people.
I'm uncomfortable watching when people are like, just think they're having a normal interaction, and it's like, what?
Yeah, they're trying to sell their Corvette, and there's some of these like 20-year-olds show up.
Yeah, I think I just feel bad when people are confused. That's why I hate it. Like, oh no, please stop. Yeah. Okay.
So
anyway,
I wanted to say something. So it's a gas valve, so it opens and closes gas supply.
Yes.
And then the pilot light is separate, which is usually burning.
Yeah.
I would guess that this caused a lot of problems. Not some problems. Probably some explosions. Because if you ever have, like, I worked for a natural gas company for a little while. If you ever have a gas leak that's not being burned, it can build up to an explosive level, as you're probably aware of from work.
They've got to have some control system. Like, if this was going to be what they relied on, then they've got to have some way to control that it's, like, not building up, but it's just stagnant until
it'd be so scary.
Valve is open.
If it didn't turn on for the day and you see it from the ground, yeah. You have to go up and go in there and like get the gas out. Knows,
yeah.
No, do not create a spark, you know, no static electricity.
Yeah, true. So. Well, speaking of explosions, Gustav won the Nobel Prize for this invention in 1912. And he couldn't accept it in person because he was blinded by an explosion during experiments for like using this type of gas. I can't remember what it's called.
Damn.
Like really light, like acid.
Acetylene.
Yeah. So he at the end of his career, he was blinded, but he was still doing experiments and like invented a couple other things, even
I think blind. I think acetylene is white gas. If I remember right, we had these lanterns as kids that when we went to go camping. There's two types of lanterns we had. One was the conventional, you know, shell lifts and closes. And the other, so that burns kerosene. And the other was, I think it was called white gas. And I think it was acetylene. Mm. Could be wrong on there. Might need a fact check. But those would fill these like pouches with gas and the pouches would ignite. And it was like white. It would burn super bright. It was these super bright lanterns.
Yeah, powerful.
Well, feel bad for Gustav.
Yeah, he was all right.
So, but he was there. He just wasn't. He couldn't see.
They just said he couldn't pick up his award in person.
Damn.
Also, 1912. I wonder if he was kind of like people didn't want to see him because he was blind.
Oh no, that's terrible.
That's what I'm saying. I know it was a bad time for anyone to have problems. Blind, man.
Well, do they have a ceremony? I think they do for Nobel. Is that in Sweden? Is that where in Stockholm?
That's interesting because,
For you, those of you who are not here, which is everyone, the cat just jumped onto Emily.
Just the one thigh, though, and then tried to balance so all the claws were out. I don't understand why you would do it to me. Okay, what I was going to say is that Gustav was Swedish, and so...
That makes sense.
Yeah. Swedish inventor.
I can't help myself.
He's looking it up.
I'm looking at white gas.
Oh, there's a couple things I didn't.
It is.
Oh, good.
Well, this is the fuel I was thinking of. Is it acetylene? Acetylene turns out is hard for me to spell.
There's a Y in there.
Okay, I got it wrong. That's not the same thing.
Okay.
I have to redact what I had said.
Whatever. It's the same vibe.
Sorry. Ow! And that was the cat jumping off.
Ow! Look!
Yep. Remember, you love these guys.
Jump off if you don't have secure legs. Those are gonna bleed.
Yeah, so Emily's now bleeding out of her leg for this podcast. Ow. And this cat. I would also just want everyone to know this is the cat that had its ACL repaired recently. Which, if you think about it, if you were to repair an ACL on a cat, you can't have that cat jump.
Yeah.
And cats can't be trained or controlled. So
or controlled.
We put that cat into
a tent
in our house for 8 weeks.
It was like, I think the tent was maybe 2 weeks or maybe three. And then we had to take all of the furniture out of our room.
I was jumping somewhere else. He shouldn't go. Bo, hey.
He's good.
It's fine. But just, to close out the story, we had the cat in the tent in the house. And that required us moving like all the things we had out of the bedroom, sleeping on the floor.
Sweet.
I think for about 8 weeks. So. This cat is loved, and that pain you hear, that's love.
That's just one of the prices you pay by owning a cat. I'll accept it.
Permanent.
It hurts so
skin
much.
Skin damage.
Okay,
do you want something for that? You want to take a pause?
Yeah, maybe I should clean it.
Let's clean it. We'll come back. All right.
All right. I'm ready to go. Back in the game.
Sorry.
You're good.
Looking at pictures of us yesterday at the wedding of our friend.
Oh, yeah.
So, picking out a couple of those.
Are you going to post some?
Yeah.
Cute. You never post stuff.
Yeah, no, never. No big deal?
Kind of a big deal.
So, I got us, and the cat got us off track. So, okay, we've got
but that was it.
Automatic valve, Nobel, and his name was Gustav, and he was blind, and he didn't get his package. He wasn't there to receive his package, his reward in person.
Yeah, but he still invented. It wasn't like he was just a recluse after that. He kept inventing. Which I just think is really crazy.
It's good too, because if you're going to go blind for some cause, it's nice to be recognized for the breakthrough that you made?
Well, I was just thinking his face isn't damaged. I saw a picture after the explosion. That's why I thought it was correct. You were saying about the white, like it burns a bright white. Mm. Like if there was an explosion, it may be bright enough to blind you. That's what I was thinking.
It could be pressure though. Just a pressure wave.
Yeah.
My grandpa lost sight in one eye from a bullet that went by. He was in World War II, in service in World War II. So
it didn't, possibilities.
It did not hit him, but the bullet came close enough to travel that it took his eye out. So, anyways, eyes are very
terrifying. Also, to know that a bullet went that close to your head.
I know. And if it was probably 2 inches, 3 inches left or right, then I wouldn't be here. Isn't that crazy? Everything this happens. Podcast yeah. this might podcast not be the same.
Would not be here. Okay. History buoy closed.
Very good. Thank you.
Next is our lighthouse.
Episode 80.
Episode 80. It's a big one. And we're going to be covering Lobster Cove Head Lighthouse.
Lobster Cove Head Lighthouse.
I kind of wish it was just called Lobster Cove Lighthouse, but I understand.
Or Lobster Head. It's
like Lobster Head. Also would be an excellent name. So we're going to stay in Canada. I did Nova Scotia last episode.
Two in a row.
I know. So a little bit north of that is the island of Newfoundland. That's obviously I was looking around.
Snooping around Canada.
Yeah, when I was like, what else is up here after we did Peggy's Cove? And then I saw Lobster Cove, and I was like, lobster? And that's how this happened.
I've heard Newfoundland is just gorgeous. I know a lot of Canada is, but.
Well, this one's nestled in a national park, so there's like all kinds of good hiking and like fjords and stuff.
Ooh. I'm excited.
Okay, so I'll pull up a picture of our location. You can see Nova Scotia down to the south, and then we have... that's Newfoundland. It's Newfoundland and Labrador, and then the island itself is Newfoundland.
Okay.
So I got a little zoomed up part so you can see the area of the lighthouse that we're covering.
Wow.
So on the west side of this island, there's a tiny bay called, I want to say it's Bon Bay, which splits into two fjords, the east and the south arm. As you can see, one is east, one is south. And the east is super deep and surrounded by the national park that I was talking about, while the south is more shallow and small with Woody Point and some other like small settlements.
Okay.
In 1889, G.C. Fern, who was part of the legislative assembly for the district that included Lobster Cove, so just a position in the government, he shared concerns from his residents about needing a lighthouse in this area. At the time, a local fisherman was running a light in his own house.
No way.
Yeah. And
for the good of the fisherman.
The residents each donated a pint of oil each week in order to fuel this light. So it was like this big community effort. Everybody was aware of needing a light because they were all contributing to one in somebody's house, which That's is just so funny. Fern thought the government should be supplying a light, obviously, at this point. And he said, quote, "A stately old dame has offered to keep the lighthouse free of salary and said she, quote, you may be sure it will always be burning, for I have three boys on the banks." End quote. So
that's nice.
Yeah, she's like, I would do it for free if you would just get a light out here, because I got all of my sons are out on the water. Yeah. Like, I want to make it safe for them.
What a nice old dame.
I know.
That's so funny. That's how they said it.
A stately old dame.
She doesn't even require a pay.
I know.
She just needs a wall.
For free. That same year, four new lighthouse locations were selected along Newfoundland's west coast, including Lobster Cove Head. So
legit.
He did a good job.
Do you know? Did you think about I'm not knowing that fishermen stopped his light because there was this new one built.
I don't know. Like,
now my little lantern's nothing.
Well, I'm sure he wasn't doing it for fun.
I don't know.
It also would be nice to take a kind of take the pressure off of having to have the only running light. Can you imagine how stressful it would be? And because that's not his only job. Like, we're used to our light keepers.
Fishing as well.
Yeah, he's also fishing.
The light keepers are...
Got to wake up in the middle of the night and make sure the light's burning. I wonder what kind of light he had. Or if it was just like some makeshift like little thing.
Something used oil though, right? It wasn't like a fire.
Yeah.
Wood fire.
they picked lighthouse locations the same year that he brought up the issue, but it was another 9 years before they had built all the necessary buildings for this lighthouse, which was like, oh my gosh, not, almost a decade.
I mean, in lighthouse history, that's not that bad.
In lighthouse construction, that's pretty bad. Like
construction, it's bad. Yeah,
they've been able to get stuff done within a year for sure. So this was just 9 years is kind of crazy. But the lighthouse was lit in spring of 1898, and pulled up an old photo. We got a nice weather vane on top. It's a round iron tower painted white, and it was connected by a 20-foot walkway to the keeper's dwelling, which was white and had black roof, or black roof on the walkway and the keeper's cottage.
Mm.
And it had a fifth order lens that flashed every 2.5 seconds. 26 feet tall. Very,
That's only 26 feet tall?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. This image, I guess the image is from below.
The lighthouse is up on a rocky, like, outcropping.
And I've never seen, that's what I said, wow, about. I've never seen a staircase as the transport between the keeper's house and the tower. What's it called where it's protected?
Walkway?
Yeah.
That's all I got. But I know what you're talking about. There's a name.
It's a walkway built into the house. The hallway. It's like a hallway that goes between the...
I can't remember what it's called. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
This one's got siding on it.
Stairs is so interesting.
Window.
And it's like cut out to match the shape of the rocks.
That's really nice.
So yeah, it's very unique. When they opened it, they also opened it as a signal station. So they had flags on a signal pole, and then each flag represented a letter of the alphabet or a phrase. And so our listeners, if you want to know what we're talking about, episode 54, our history buoy, we cover nautical flags.
Sure did.
And what those mean. So it's actually really interesting. Pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Be fun to be able to communicate with just flags.
Really cool. And that's what those masts are often for, right? It's like a mast on land.
Yeah. I have an example. I have a picture coming up where you can see the flags. So this one I think is probably different. We're not in the U.S., so maybe it was more standardized in the U.S. But there's only three keepers total at this lighthouse. The first was Robert Lewis, and he served for 5 years until William Young took over in 1902. He and his wife Esther,
I would guess.
It's a TH. So I'm like,
Ether.
Esther.
I don't know.
In my head, I must have been thinking Esther. It's fine. We're so sorry to Young, Mrs. Young. They raised 8 children at the lighthouse.
Wow.
And one of them, George, took over in 1941 until 1970. So George and his dad both served 39 years and 29 years.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy.
That's crazy. One family.
Yeah. A little small town action over here. Because it's not like a booming area and you're still on an island. So in a lot of cases in history, lighthouses that are on an island away from big cities, keepers don't last for really long stretches of time. So must have been more of a local mindset.
Fishing focus, and then obviously they had some trade probably in that cove, that bay with Nova Scotia. I saw on the map Prince Edward Island, PEI, is up. It's northwest of,
Nova Scotia.
Yeah, but it's, so Prince Edward Island. I've heard lots of people, a couple of people I know have physically gone there. They said it's just really stunning, that set of islands. So.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know enough about Newfoundland to say whether or not it's like a thing people travel to.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a scale of how far that would be across the bay. Yeah. And how difficult it would be to travel.
I mean, it looks like the distance is comparable to like Maine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool part of the world.
You may go there to this area for the national park if you're like a national park person.
Yeah, what does that say? That national park name?
Gros Morne.
Okay.
Gros Morne. I don't know.
Lots of green up there. Oh, nice photo.
There's where they would keep their signal flag. So it's just a flag post, and they would raise and lower any communication, weather and such.
Mm-hmm. This looks like a recent photo.
It is. Yeah, this is what it looks like today. It's interesting because the I didn't read anything about there being red trim around the keeper's house, and it has red trim. So, you know, in old pictures, it's hard to tell if it matches the black roof or if it's red or...
Yeah, and we've seen a couple, but an all-white lighthouse is actually not that common.
No, because they usually want it to stand out from clouds. I mean, you can even see in this picture from a distance, it would probably blend in pretty well.
Mm-hmm. But it's on the highest point, I would guess, the local highest point. And they said it's 20-something feet tall, less than 30.
26, yeah. Nothing crazy, but yeah, it is pretty high up there. 1969, the lighthouse was fit with automation equipment, and the light was eventually transferred to Parks Canada. So they are in charge of maintaining the light at this point. Yeah. 1990, it became a recognized federal heritage building. Nowadays, the Keeper's House is a museum, which is open this year, May 16 to May 13. Oh, sorry, May 16 to October 13. It's open 10 a.m. to 5:30 every day. And there's also park rangers on site that will give you all the history of the lighthouse and the surrounding national park and all the people that live there. So I pulled up a picture of, they have some stuff in the Keeper's House to make it look like when they were living there. And so you can like walk around and see what they used, and they have like a bunch of exhibit stuff. And then you can see the entrance. There's a picture of the inside of the walkway to the front door of the tower.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. Kind of spooky.
I'm not scared when I see this picture.
Looks like you're going, it's like a door you should never enter.
I guess the end of it. So it's this stairway that's painted red, like everything's red.
Yeah.
And it looks like they have some steps of what was required of the lighthouse keepers on there, which is kind of mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah.
On the treads. But then, yeah, the top of it, I guess, is kind of ominous. Single bright
bulb,
light.
Yeah.
Right over a red door.
Which is interesting because the lighthouse is white. So
they really embrace the red.
I was going to say, I wonder when they painted that whole thing red.
Well, and the floor of the house is red. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Okay, so the trim must have been red to go with the theme.
Yeah. Red was on sale.
Yeah.
But it looks really cool. I mean, you might as well do something different.
It is really neat.
A different space. That entry looks really heavy duty. Mm-hmm. So if there was some crazy storm, they could probably still be safe in the lighthouse itself. And then I just want to point out, I see a wood stove.
Mm-hmm.
Not a traditional wood stove like for heating, but for cooking.
Yeah.
That's really cool. My great, what do you think about that? Yeah, my great grandparents, I guess.
When stoves used to be fancy, so then now they have like little claw feet and everything on them.
Yeah, claw feet pretty and neat. A little window into the firebox.
Yeah.
Really neat.
Pretty neat.
I would love to visit. Looks awesome.
Yeah, I feel like it would be a fun little stop. I wonder how you get to Newfoundland. Like, do they have a flight or do you have to take a ferry or a boat?
I would guess you take a boat. They may have airport. I mean, everywhere has an airport.
Yeah.
For bush pilots and whatnot in
it's interesting.
Canada and Alaska, like the outer areas. But it might be big enough of an island that has a full-size airport. I'm not
Newfoundland
sure.
has several airports, including Gander International Airport. Hey,
look at us.
St. John's International Airport. Okay, so there's all kinds.
They're probably small flights.
It looks like... I was thinking that Newfoundland would have one area where they have the most concentrated people, but the airports are completely, they're on every edge of Newfoundland. Well,
can you like just look at one of them? They're probably not, you know, like Denver International. It's probably not going to be big. No. And this is a different part of the world, but just of interest, like Alaska. We're talking to some people that have a house in view of Denali. And they were talking about a lot of the places in Alaska, you cannot reach them by road or by boat.
Yeah.
You can only fly in. And so people, that's why bushcraft, small aircrafters are so, bush planes are so popular up there. And I wonder if parts of Canada aren't the same.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense. If it's like dense vegetation and everything, you wouldn't go through all the effort of putting in a road, it'd actually be really difficult.
But, you know, if you have a lighthouse, probably reach it by boat.
Yeah. In the fjords. I should have put some pictures in here of the, like, what's the word I'm trying to think of?
The local town?
Just the nature, like, around there, like a picture of the fjord, not just a Google map, but we'll have to search it.
Well, the Google map was awfully green.
Green and deep blue water. Very attractive. Good reason to visit this place, aside from the lighthouse. But that's Lobster Cove Head Lighthouse.
Very nice.
Just a little episode, little bite.
Short episode.
Yeah, short episode.
With our little break, we're sitting at just over 30 minutes right now.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you'll be leaving next week for Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll expect a Swedish episode when you come back.
Yeah, I gotta prepare. I'll probably have a short episode as well.
Okay.
But yeah. I gotta figure out a recording.
Too busy traveling.
Too busy out seeing Sweden.
The world, flying internationally. You know how it is.
Yeah, flying flying into Gutenberg, Göteborg. Something like that.
Göteborg.
Something like that. Yeah. And then eventually flying home from Stockholm.
Okay.
So,
but you guys are doing like a big, drive. Driving? Okay.
South. So we're going to go.
Start in Stockholm and end in Stockholm?
No, start in Gutenberg and in Stockholm.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So fly in there, go south. They're not doing tours. This is such a side note, but one of my other hobbies and interests is cars. And there's a manufacturer called Koenigsegg, which is in Sweden. Different pronunciations of that as well.
Yeah, of course.
Anyways, worth looking up if you're into cars. Starts with a K. But we're going to go south. We're going to go to the area. Oh, my gosh. The land of glass. So there's an area of Sweden that's known for glassworks and crystal.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like crystal... cups, glasses. So I'm hoping to buy some glasses there and bring them home. And then,
so cool.
I know. Oh, Emily's missing out.
I love glass.
If only we'd gotten married earlier.
What?
Then you'd go along.
Oh, it's like permanent family only.
It was, spouses. And I don't even know if spouses were included, but it's so that it's a family heritage trip. So I should fill in everyone who's still listening. We're going to go see some of the people who are related to us in far distant past. Some of the Swedes that helped me with my blonde hair and tall height.
Nice.
And then mom wants to show us some of the things that her mom showed her in Sweden that were important to my grandma. Her name was Gertrude. Went by Trudy. Trudy Johnson. So anyways, half of my family was Swedish, and my mom wants to show us, me and my brother, some of that history and some of those places.
Is your mom 100% Swedish?
She is.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom's, American, North American, United States citizen, right? But from her heritage was all Swedish.
Yeah.
Because I told somebody at work this, made me smile. My mom's maiden name was Johnson. So Trudy's maiden name was Swanson.
Okay.
So Gertrude Swanson.
Yeah.
And I don't know before that, but I think I remember if you go back, there's another Johnson in that family.
Really?
Or another Johnson Swanson. Like, Johnsons, but they weren't related to these Johnsons or something.
Yeah, of course.
And or Swansons, I guess. And anyways, you can take away what you want from that. But yeah, my dad's side didn't have any Swedish heritage, so I'm a mixer.
Yeah,
but turned out tall and arrogant. So
arrogant. I'm 50% German.
Yeah,
my mom's 100% German.
Yeah, from where'd she grow up? Town
Bremen, Kansas.
A lot of the a lot of the small towns in Kansas. Again, fun fact for you who are not in Kansas. Were settled by Germans and Volga Germans, which was, you can look that up too, but Volga with a V. They were transient through Germany. So they had one generation in Germany from, I think, what was Prussia, and now I'm guessing, and then came to the U.S. and came west because it was open and they could do what they wanted. And there's whole communities like where I grew up, Hayes, Kansas, where there's very few last names. There's a lot of shoemakers. There's a lot of Dinkles, Schmitz. Like there's
that's
like
so funny.
Huge families. And yeah. And now in modern culture, a lot of those people stay there. Like my good friends yeah. from high school, a lot of them still live there because mm-hmm. they want to be around their family. So big family town, long history, and they think of themselves as German heritage. And that's kind of up for debate, depending on who you ask.
Because it's just one generation yeah. in history.
Like Volga Germans are not Germans, according to some other German heritage.
Yeah, if you were like fully German, like your ancestors are from Germany.
Yeah.
You'd probably have a problem with someone being like, I'm German.
Who cares, you know?
But well, like, yeah, but if that's part of yeah. your life, like, we don't care because...
Yeah, we I don't mean, care.
Well, maybe you should care because you're going on a international trip to meet your Swedish family.
Yeah, my roots.
Yeah, so you seem like you should care a little more.
Well, about that, but you know what I mean? Like, so for the Volga Germans, so if you go to Hayes, you can find in several stores this food called a Bierock.
Uh-huh.
Which is it's like sourdough or white bread, and it's filled with hamburger and cabbage mm-hmm. or lettuce. And then, you know, you dip it in ketchup if you're me. And it's like a Hot Pocket, but like a heritage Hot Pocket. And everyone there would tell you, oh, these are German. They're from Germany. You know, sauerkraut and now cabbage and the hamburger, you know. They're not from Germany. They're not in Germany. No one knows what that is. A Bierock it's not the same thing. In Germany, and it's not like the Americanized version of a hamburger versus Hamburg, Germany. It's a different. Anyways,
I'm wow, you have a lot of.
I mean, I grew up there. It was the whole thing.
You have a lot of history in your brain.
The high school used to make Bierocks by the hundreds and sell them as a fundraiser. So the high school, I think the cooks, you know, staff would volunteer to make hundreds of these things. They'd sell them packs of 12 frozen.
Oh my!
Anyways, so we ate a lot of Bierocks growing up.
Harmless, just a little harmless fun.
Yeah, a little crossover of culture. So yeah. I'm going to try to learn some of that when I go to Sweden.
Excellent.
I think we're meeting a lady named Monica.
Oh.
Who's a relative of mine, I think. And my mom told me a guy, he's too old to meet us now, but she met with him when she went there last.
Yeah.
And I want to say his name was like Oslo.
Cool name.
Ericsson, something like that. So
those were very different names you just said.
I think there's a couple people in my mind. I was trying not to name the snowman from Frozen. What's his name?
Oh, Olaf.
Olaf. Another very. You know what?
It could be. Oh.
My mom mentioned.
I have some vague memory of you actually saying
I think that's the snowman from.
Yeah. I think it is. Oh,
so you can see as this example, my mind is not. Most accurate, but we do have fun.
You got to check out the spreadsheet a little more. You got to get educated on the spreadsheet.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll wrap this up.
We'll wrap this up. But we're going to Sweden.
You're going to Sweden. I'm going to Sweden. And you have to bring me back gifts. You can check out our podcast on the lighthouselowdown.com where you can watch our YouTube videos and listen to our podcast and leave us a review. We love reviews. Haven't gotten one in over a year.
Oh, come on.
On our website, I think Spotify, we get more reviews, but I don't have Spotify, so I don't see those. If you want me to see that you left us a review, put it on the website. For the love of God, put it on the website. And we'll catch you next time on The Lighthouse Lowdown.
Getting emotional.